The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder about the many evangelicals and conservatives these days acting like their rights are being taken away simply because the government is trying to protect us. They seem kind of paranoid. Does God want us to be paranoid? Does the God that Christians believe in want us to be paranoid? No, my friend, of course not. God does not want us to be paranoid. If there's one encouragement given by God again and again in the Scripture, Old Testament through New Testament, it's fear not or have courage. We see those phrases again and again. At the same time, there's another theme dominant throughout the Bible, from the apostles, from the prophets, Jesus. God calls us to be cautious, yes, and in that caution, he warns us to tell people when we see danger from corrupt governments or anything else. His prophets in both Testaments expressed great concern about the degeneration of nations, and they didn't just talk to Israel. His prophets went out to many different nations. So what about our country? In many parts of the country, including parts of California, a significant number of prisoners are being released. And police protection in some cities is being reduced, all in the name of responding to the coronavirus. But just in case you're thinking that in the wake of such decisions, you might just go buy a gun to protect yourself, many gun stores are simultaneously being shut down by the same governments. Trump's not for that. He's made that clear. But state by state and city by city, they're doing what they want. They're shutting them down because they are not essential services, quote unquote. Pot stores and liquor stores are remaining open. I guess they are essential. Perhaps in the hopes that our brains will become too fried to notice a violation of the Second Amendment, they've kept the pot and liquor stores open. Translation, we're not going to protect you, neither are we going to allow you to protect yourself. Now, I should say in some places, such orders have been lifted because the NRA has been threatening to sue in some places. But in many locations, it still goes on. And why not? Why should the politicians issuing these orders find anything to worry about? Many of them have their own hired gun security. Now, before I go on, I am not a member of the NRA. I do not own a gun. Still, I just have to ask, if criminals are being set free at the same time police protection is deliberately waning, would that not, by definition, make gun stores an essential service? And this obvious question is asked against the backdrop of a prior truth that state or city governments are not supposed to violate the Second Amendment of the federal Constitution. Anyway, period. Wasn't it enough that they've already abolished freedom of assembly, including churches and synagogues, which means freedom of religion is also being restricted? That's three for three. While most Americans are scrambling for toilet paper, another important paper is being denied us. A paper document written by our founding fathers. Don't misunderstand me. National social distancing guidelines have been, at least to some degree, a good idea. And maybe it is wise for churches and other large groups to stop meeting for a while. Maybe they should. But my friends, they should be allowed to make such decisions themselves, voluntarily. Guidelines are one thing. States turning those guidelines into executive orders, or cities turning them into laws that violate the U.S. Constitution, are another matter altogether. In the immortal words of Benjamin Franklin, those who would give up essential liberty for a chance to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. But believe it or not, an even bigger virus controversy was in the news many years ago. I'll bet you missed it, but I didn't. The year was 2006. Even back then, I was doing the same radio show here at 1170 The Answer. So the story did come to my attention. Eric Arpianka, a very famous professor of integrated biology at the University of Texas in Austin, had received some notoriety. He was already very famous, very liked, had been given awards. But this certain notoriety was for saying that the Earth could not survive, ultimately, unless 95% of the human population was wiped out through a disease like the Ebola virus. Not necessarily that, but he used Ebola as an example. I'm not making this up. This was a real story. Now, he did claim he was being quoted out of context when he got into trouble, that he was actually not calling for that to happen. He was saying that's what would need to happen for the Earth to survive, but he wasn't calling anybody to develop the virus. And people argue back and forth about what he meant to say, what he didn't mean to say. But here's something else he did write clearly. This was also in 2006 in a journal called The Vanishing Book of Life. I'm going to read just one short paragraph to you. Despite our human-oriented attitudes, other life forms are not irrelevant to our own existence. We need them to continue to exist ourselves. Okay, now, so far, so good. Of course, there are symbiotic relationships in nature and biology. So far, so good. The problem is he went on. Now, catch this part. As proven products of natural selection that have adapted to natural environments over millennia, they have a right to exist too. We share most of our genes with other organisms, including bacteria and fungi. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that did not catch too much of the news. I just wonder how a statement like that would go over today with the pandemic going on, not in our country, but the entire world. Needless to say, back when this became news, or at least a little bit of news, the idea of bacteria and viruses having rights, well, you know me, that inspired something I could not resist. Something we do a lot on this show, satire. In that vein, back in 2006, we set up an interview. It was an interview with a virus. My co-host back then was Sharon Cachard. She conducted the interview. Now, this is a little bit dated because, as you know, in 2006, George Bush was president. So he was the one that the media was calling Hitler every day instead of Donald Trump. But it was a fun way to take a satirical view of political correctness gone amok. Here it is as it played in 2006, a KCBQ blast to the past. The Bob Siegel Show presents Interview with a Virus.
And now it's our pleasure to introduce a new guest to the Bob Siegel Show, one of the activists behind these protests from the Diseases Under Major Banishment Union, or DUMB Union for short. Please welcome Vinny the Virus. Nice to have you on our program, Mr. Virus.
Thanks for having me.
Well, having you is the subject at hand. People do not want to have you, and they don't want to have any other virus either. So what exactly is the purpose of your organization?
I'm glad you asked that, Sharon. The Diseases Under Major Banishment Union is both a reaction to ignorance and a protest. We object to the way viruses are being portrayed by the media.
And how exactly do you feel you're being portrayed, Mr.
Well,
Virus?
Kind of negatively. To watch the news these days, you'd think there was something wrong with virus and disease.
Wait a minute. Are you actually suggesting that diseases aren't bad? You're claiming diseases are good?
Who's to say what's good or bad? Those are relative terms. What's bad for one individual might be good to another.
Okay, Mr. Virus. Give me one example of sickness being a good thing.
It keeps kids home from school at times. Some kids really like that. They get to lay around and watch TV.
What about when sicknesses actually kill?
Oh, I knew you were going to bring that one up. You right-wingers are always complaining about death.
Well, it's a pretty obvious thing to bring up, wouldn't you say?
You want to bring up something obvious? How about George Bush?
No, we're not going there. No, you're not going to change the subject. I want you to address this question. How can dying from a disease be a good thing? Please explain that to our listening audience.
Dinosaurs died from disease. Do you miss the dinosaurs? Would you like to see a Tyrannosaurus Rex on the freeway? Either you'd get eaten, or you'd get stuck in a traffic jam. Either way, you'd be late for work.
Mr. Virus, I was under the impression that other factors destroyed the dinosaurs.
Oh, really? Were you there at the time?
No.
Well, I was. Or at least my forefathers were, before they mutated into me and my associates. My mutation is a good thing. Denying mutation denies evolution, and denying evolution violates separation between church and state.
Oh my gosh. Mr. Virus, we aren't here to discuss church, or state, or dinosaurs. We're here to discuss the fact that diseases are dangerous.
Dangerous, are we?
Of course you're dangerous. Diseases have been responsible for virtual genocide. Look how many Native Americans were wiped out when European explorers came to American shores with smallpox and other diseases like that.
Well, don't blame me. Blame that guy with the boats who was trying to prove the world was round to a bunch of idiots who couldn't figure that out for themselves.
I don't think Columbus intended to bring about genocide. That was your doing.
Oh, you want to talk about genocide, lady? Okay, let's talk about it. How about that Hippocratic Oath? Doctors taking vows to destroy all disease? If that's not genocide, what is?
Well, doctors have no choice. They have to kill diseases. Otherwise, diseases will kill us.
Oh, lady, give me a break. How many times have you caught the common cold? That's a virus, and you're still alive, aren't you?
Listen, even a common cold can get worse. Doesn't that prove that any kind of disease is a potential threat?
When you say that all disease is a threat, you sound very racist.
You are a threat.
A threat to people, maybe, but not to the entire world. You aren't the only ones on this planet. Viruses have a right to be here, too.
Wait a minute. So viruses are equal to people? That's what you're saying?
Oh, I don't think we're equal to people. I think we're superior to people. Look at the killing done by humanity. You deserve to be wiped out by diseases.
So you admit to wanting to wipe us out?
Well, sure. But not in a racist way like you humans would do it. We don't hate people because of their skin color or gender or culture. We kill all people equally without discrimination.
Yes, you do, and that's a crime.
It may be a crime, but at least it isn't a hate crime.
Okay, all right. This is over. Thank you very much, Mr. Virus, for joining us. I would offer to shake hands, but I don't want to catch anything.
Oh, that's funny. That's really funny.
You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Of course, we mean no disrespect to those worried about the spread of coronavirus. It is concerning to all of us, but sometimes when things get rough, there is value in lightening up the tension. When we return, we're going to say hello to a different guest, a much better guest than Vinny the Virus. My good friend Jim Barrier will be with us.
Believe it or not, Bob Siegel is aware that there may be one or two people who disagree with his opinions. to offer your own comments on the topic at hand, or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, feel free to contact Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development, that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at wisdomworkschristianpreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. wisdomworkschristianpreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. My guest, Jim Barrier, joins us once a month, as you know. Now, the last time he was here, about a month ago, he had just retired as a pastor. Little did he know that when he came back on just 1 month later, the entire country would have retired with him. Say hello to Jim Barrier.
Well, I've always been a step ahead of the rest.
Yeah, boy.
and I want to say happy Palm Sunday to everybody today.
Yes, of course.
Today we commemorate. But I have to question your judgment on your show, Bob. You for bumper music, returning back, you're playing the song Touch Me.
Yeah, you brought that up once before. You'd be doing me the biggest favor to not remind the audience every time we play that. I like the music. I'm not defending every stupid word that came out of Jim Morrison's mouth.
No, Bob, you missed my point.
You mean Touch Me related to the virus?
Yes.
That, of course, wasn't what Jim Morrison meant. Okay, you know what? That was a good joke, Jim. And I ruined it for you. I take full responsibility.
That's okay. Our listeners were able to see beyond.
Well, the last time you brought it up, you were talking specifically about what Jim Morrison said. So.
Well, last time we brought it up, we were talking about the hashtag MeToo movement, so it still was inappropriate.
Yeah, well, the last time we brought it up, we were still living in an actual country, an actual republic.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's been a long time since then, but...
It seems like it's been about a year since last time.
Yeah, it must have been.
Yeah, the 1 month ago seems light years away right now.
So, I try to pay attention to what you're doing, and I know that Dana has been having some issues, and we're praying for her and her health. And how are you? Are you well?
I am well. I am in that age group. Not kind of. I'm in my 60s. I'm not in the 80s. I do have asthma. So when I talk about the fact that I do want to see some guidelines, but that, you know, I agree with President Trump when he says he doesn't want the cure to be worse than the virus. I resonate with that. And I also resonate with something that your lieutenant governor said in Texas. He said, I'm almost turning 70 and I want to live. I don't want to get this thing, but I also want my grandchildren to grow up in the same country that I was in. This is not sustainable. It's like when somebody has cancer and they give them so much chemo that it kills the cancer, but it kills everything else. And I know that that doesn't always happen to chemo. There's different kinds of chemo, but it often happens. It's really a great analogy.
Yeah. And I think of all of the presidents in my lifetime, we have a guy who understands the economy and how it works and what he can do as president. And I think we have the best chance of pulling through all of this. It's how long this goes on.
Well, I think his instincts were right. I believe it's very possible we're already beyond the point. but they need to turn the circuit breaker on soon. I believe Trump is very sincere. He's used to listening to advice as a businessman and then making his decision, but he was listening to businessmen. He's not a doctor. He knows he's not a doctor. He doesn't want to see people die, unlike the accusations the mainstream media give him. So you think you're listening to doctors and you're going, well, they know what they're talking about. We need to listen. Yes, they are. But see, a doctor's always going to come down on the side of being careful. That's why they're doctors. That makes them good doctors. But Trump needs to listen to some economists, too. And I know he has. It's a balance. It's one of those balances, no matter what he does. But if we become an impoverished nation, so many more people will die. We'll have all kinds of diseases that we have vaccines for, but there won't be enough vaccines to go along. It'll be like nothing. It's not the economy or health. It's health and health. And we need to turn the country back on.
Yeah, I agree. Now, what I wanted to talk about some tonight is the COVID-19, coronavirus, and its effect on the church. And I know you did a class this morning. How did that go?
That's good. We did our first one last week. I teach over at Skyline.
Right.
Ever since we went on this lockdown thing, did their services online.
Right.
And then I sent out a letter to my class about a week later saying, you know, because none of the classes were allowed to meet either. And I said, hey, miss y'all, just give me a call if you need anything. Send me an email. You can at least catch my radio show on the air, as if they were missing my teaching, you know. And then several of them responded back appreciating that. And then one person told me about Zoom. And then as it happened, I sit on the board of an organization called Life Perspectives. Dana does special Bible studies. And all week long, Dana and I, mostly Dana, were on Zoom. I think the country's kind of discovered Zoom.
Yeah.
So, Jim, I know you're retired, but if you wanted to start your own church, you could get a Zoom account and you wouldn't have to pay rent to any building. You wouldn't have to have any business codes, although I'm sure maybe not in your state. In my state, they'd find a way to to regulate it anyway. But it's going well. There's bugs. Some people are internet savvy, some aren't. I'm somewhere in between. I live on the internet, and yet there's still a lot of stuff. I had never done Zoom before, but I'd say the last 2 weeks, for the most part, went really well. The class is certainly glad, and there are some people who have health issues who haven't been able to make it to my class, and some people who've moved out of the state, and all of a sudden, last week, I'm looking on the screen, and they're all there attending class. So, I mean, some good things have come out of this.
That's a cool thing. Well, you know, and most of the churches that I know are having to do online services. And as you mentioned, I no sooner retired than this whole thing hit. I wouldn't be having services at church anyway. And as you know, a big part of what our church did for 18 years was to feed the homeless and run a soup kitchen and take care of people. We wouldn't have been able to have those meetings. We couldn't allow any group of that size to have 100 people come in, much less people who have substandard hygiene in many cases. And so it seemed to me very timely. I'm not saying that I was smart enough to figure that out in advance. I certainly wasn't, but I sure do consider myself fortunate and making the right decisions at the right time.
Yeah, and isn't that a Kodak moment right there in the name of public health? You're not allowed to be feeding the homeless and the poor. Okay, we'll be right back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. WNS specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, Incorporated. License number 480-539, WNS Electric.
People are enjoying Bob Siegel's time travel novel, Push the Winds Around. Check out these customer reviews on Amazon.com. This is one of those books, like certain movies, where you keep thinking about it long after you finished. Once I picked it up, I didn't want to put it down until I'd read the entire book. Literally, a page-turner. Every character came to life. Their personalities were well-defined and consistent. First thing I did after I finished the book was to ask about the sequel. The next customer said, "I read this book cover to cover in one sitting. Great read with completely unexpected ending that left me wishing there was just one more chapter. Give yourself a couple of hours to read it all at once because you won't want to put it down." Push the Winds Around, available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, your old pal Bob finally figured out why Trump is embracing so much social distancing. It gives him an excuse to have less of the Washington press corps in the room. Say hello again to Jim Barrier.
You know, and I wouldn't blame him if that were the case. So we're talking about churches doing online services, and there's not a lot of other option for some of the big churches. But the truth is, elderly and shut-ins have relied on TV church for years. Podcasts is certainly nothing new. And so using the electronic tools to have service or church or some connection isn't a new thing. It just has never been so widespread. But I have some concerns about that being the constant, steady diet for the church. It seems to me, and I've talked about this before, that a lot of the modern evangelical church culture has really become, the priority has been entertainment. You know, you have to have a happening band. Boy, they've got to have the smoking drums and lights and really good sound and a tight band and lively music. And then you have to have a preacher who's entertaining. Whether he has content or not is secondary to whether he has style. And I'm generalizing here, but I know an awful lot of churches where it's fallen into this, and I've even heard churches advertise, you know, come to our church, you'll hear lively music and entertaining sermon, and no one will ask you to do anything. And so I'm concerned about this evolution of now going to online services where people can just kind of have church like it's another TV program and just watch that, because you leave out fellowship and praying together and intimacy and things that are, I think, life essential to the church, the body of Christ, the ecclesia. And I have a concern about that people are not available, or that is not available to people to have fellowship. And I think the only hope is churches that have small groups. Now, I don't know what the rule is now in California, but where we're at, I think it's 10 people. But you could certainly get together with a half a dozen or 10 people, or, you know, a small group, and you could pray for one another, keeping your distance, of course. You could share things, talk back and forth. I heard about one group that did this where they just got together and they did a Zoom thing like that, and they were just kind of having a support group, so to speak. They were able to talk and share prayer requests, and that seems to be helpful. But out of this, somehow we're going to have to find a way where people can connect with other living, breathing human beings and not just sit there glued to the screen. I'm concerned about that.
Yeah, the internet's a wonderful tool. Like I said, I'm on the internet all the time, but God did not mean for us to live there 24/7. There's certain things that we must do as human beings just to continue being human beings. And frankly, even when you think about disease, we're not developing immunizations, natural immunizations, if we're not around people. I'm no scientist, yeah. But I know that and I've had some people tell me, hey, the church isn't a building. We don't need to be in a building. I know that. Years ago, I was involved in a house church when these guys wouldn't have gone to a church that was in a church. I'm very aware. You're very aware. We can meet wherever we want. First time I preached in a church, it was out in the forest. But the point is, we should be able to do it wherever we want. Now, again, let me say this again, because I know on radio, people drive, they don't hear the whole show. Whether or not it's a good idea to do some social distancing for a while, the jury may be out on that. I don't have a problem if a church decides to do that. I just say it should be their decision. And it's not just the church. Look how many businesses have been shut down. This is not sustainable. Yeah. And I know Trump came up with the stimulus package, which is great, but that wasn't designed to go on indefinitely. And politicians are going to keep it coming. You just watch, Jim, next year when the flu comes out, we're going to hear about social distancing. When we finally do reopen up the economy to some degree, restaurants are going to be told how many tables they have to have. You just watch. Again, not every state, because we are a federation of different states, but it's going to happen.
Well, and there are some churches that have actually gone against the local laws. There have been pastors that are being charged because they went ahead and held meetings with large groups, and they consider it worth the consequences. The stories that I've read about those groups, they tend to have maybe that kind of attitude of, that this is the Antichrist and that they're resisting that in the name of God. And so they may be a little extreme. And I'm not supporting that kind of extremism. And I do think that each pastor or each group is responsible to make their own decision, to make a choice. But if you're going to do something and do it, let's say, in the spirit of the book of Acts, where they said, you decide whether we should obey God or man, be willing to suffer the consequences, because those early disciples also went to prison and were beaten for refusing to give in to what they considered unjust government. So I'm just concerned about a lot of these things. Speaking of the early church, let me read this. This is very familiar. You've read this, I'm sure, many, many times. This is out of Acts chapter 2, after the big event of the day of Pentecost that most people talk about. This is what happened afterwards. It says, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship and breaking bread and prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many signs and wonders. The believers were all together and had everything in common, socialism.
falsely called socialism.
Let me finish. And it says, every day they continued to meet together, and they broke bread in their homes and ate together, and they were glad with sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all people. And the Lord added to their numbers daily who were being saved. And the first church met in homes. And you mentioned house ministries. In fact, many times people would describe the church that I pastored for so long as really like a home group that just happened to have a building, because we would interact. And when we had prayer time, people would move around and pray for one another. And they didn't just listen to me pray. Everybody participated. And I think that could be a healthy thing, to have home church.
It certainly could be. It needs to be our choice. I did interview a pastor from a couple of cities very close to San Diego who a number of years ago was told that his people could not meet in a home because homes aren't zoned to be churches. So again, depends on the state you're in. But when the government has a little taste of power in the belly, nothing will ever be enough. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel. As a Christian apologist, I hear scorning and ridicule all the time from Bible skeptics and unbelievers. Some churches will still respond to such people with love and understanding. Others do not.
You Christians are such morons. There's no proof that God exists, and only a pea brain would believe in miracles. Wake up! Step into the 21st century. Besides, Christianity is responsible for most of the world's problems.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Relax, my friends. That's not the kind of response you'll get from Skyline Church. We welcome you just as you are, with all your doubts, all your questions, and all your concerns. Your problems with religion are understandable, and I promise at Skyline you'll experience the love of Jesus Christ, not the revenge of a Sith Lord.
Skyline Church.
And now it's time for a public service announcement from the Bob Siegel Show. Attention all criminals who are being released from prisons by liberal states and cities in the name of proper coronavirus protocol. If you plan to hold up a bank or grocery store, be sure to obey social distancing and stand 6 feet apart from the others while waiting in the teller line or checkout line. Say hello again to Jim Barrier.
There's a lot of irony in that, isn't there?
Yeah, you used to be you got arrested if you went into a bank with a scarf around your neck. Now you can get arrested maybe somewhere down the road if you don't go into a bank with a scarf around your neck.
Yeah, it's a crazy world. Now, we talked about a little bit about the power play, the things that are going on, and you kind of predicted what would happen next year. But let's have a little hope that the November election could shift things, and some of the crazies who wield power right now may be relieved of that power. And I'm really hoping for that.
Yes, I have that same hope, because I believe, and I'm not one of these nutcases that says the coronavirus is a hoax. And I think some of these pastors that are at these churches that are meeting anyway, some of them are nutcases, which muddies the waters, because the truth is they have a right to meet. But I do believe that the Democrats, the mainstream media, they're exploiting this virus in the hope of, I think a lot of them are being very shameless, coming out and saying this is great for our agenda. Mario Cuomo comes out and says we're going to have a new normal now. So it's very predictable, unfortunately. I have hope. I do believe that with warts and all, God put President Trump in power. I believe God can save our country. I believe in miracles. But let me say this as soberly as I can. A miracle is exactly what it's going to take. Absolutely nothing less. If our country continues on its trajectory without God's intervention, it will not survive. It'll be called the United States of America, but it won't be the United States of America.
Well, and some of us have been saying that for several years, but things have intensified.
It's now accelerated.
I want to read something that I've seen a few times recently. I was not aware of this one. You remember David Wilkerson started Teen Challenge.
Yes. And wrote The Cross and the Switchblade.
Great story. I knew Brother Dave. I was part of a ministry, and our headquarters was right next door to his headquarters, and I actually played basketball with Dave Wilkerson. How about that?
Wow, boy, you've hobnobbed with a lot of famous people, Jim.
and present company included.
Hey, could you introduce me to Moses sometime? I've always wanted to have a conversation with that guy.
You know, he stutters. So,
and when he was a little kid, his mother said, "Would you stop parting your chicken soup and just eat it?"
Yeah, exactly. This is something that has surfaced, and I've checked it out, and it's valid. This is something that David Wilkerson said in 1986, and I'll qualify this to say that David Wilkerson was the only true prophet that I ever knew in the sense of a biblical-type prophet. He spoke things, he saw things, and they came to pass, and it was uncanny sometimes. And it took years sometimes. This is what he said in 1986. I see a plague coming on the world. The bars, the churches, the government will shut down. The plague will hit New York City and shake it like it's never been shaken. The plague is going to force prayerless believers into radical prayer and into their Bibles, and repentance will be the cry of from the man of God in the pulpit. And out of it will come a third great awakening that will sweep America and the world. That's pretty heavy-duty stuff, 40 years ago.
Yeah, it is, and let's hope that last part of it actually happens.
Or 34. Well, and that's the thing. And he was, David was not a doomsdayer, as some people would like to peg him as. He always had hope, and he always put his trust in God. And but people laughed and scorned. He had a vision in 1971, and when that he put it in a print form in a book, and people laughed and said it's ridiculous. And it took years and years, but everything that he saw and printed in that book came to pass. And I personally saw things that, you know, on a local level where we're at, where he would say things, and then later on they would come to pass. This gives me hope in the middle of all of this, the punchline being that there would be a great awakening that would come out of this. We'll have to wait and see, but that is conditional. It's if God's people will pray.
Yes, the
God.
Promise in Chronicles, if my people, which are called by my name, will humble themselves and pray,
yes.
Turn from their wicked ways, I will hear their prayers and heal their land. And, of course, he also said, and forgive their sin, very important part
of it. Funny, I have that in my notes, but you just quoted it perfectly. And
well, what can I say when you're a prophet? It just kind of comes out. No, and then I'm not claiming to be a prophet
of different sorts.
I'm not claiming to be that kind of prophet, but I do think a lot of these things are easy to predict. Wilkerson, I had some issues with him. I really loved his Cross of the Swift. Because he definitely said we were living in the end times, our last generation. We may be, but of course Jesus said nobody knows the day or the hour. Yeah. However, that prophecy that you just read, certainly that was very interesting. That's
pretty
chilling.
And he did, I probably am a little more acquainted because, you know, just from my history and stuff. And he did come out at one point and say that the one thing that he had repented of and was wrong about was putting any timeline or putting dates on anything.
Well, good for him. And New Testament gave a little more slack to prophets than the Old Testament. A lot of people don't realize this. In the New Testament, we were supposed to have several prophets speak, and then the church was supposed to pray about it and weigh them.
It
only becomes a problem when they get up and say, "Thus saith the Lord, God absolutely told me this." Well, if you're going to say that, then he darn better well have told you that. We'll be right back.
You've already heard some of the wonderful customer reviews of the Dangerous Christmas Ornament, but now listen to some highlights from a professional review by Lisa Ruth of Communities Digital News. The book is literally a page-turner that will delight children and adults alike. Readers will find a piece of themselves in Mike, whom Siegel portrays perfectly. He develops the 12-year-old deftly and makes him real to the readers. They will adore Aunt Lorene. They will remember their first love and the pain of betrayal from a friend. Caligula the cat is a wonderfully clever addition to the story. He steals the book with his caustic insight, making all readers wonder just what their own pets would say if they could talk. The real gift of the Dangerous Christmas Ornament is the lessons it weaves amid the adventure. It reminds us of the social and personal responsibility we share and the repercussions of our actions on those around us. The dangerous Christmas ornament has adventure, entertainment, and some extremely important lessons. What more could you ask for in a book?
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Say hello again to Jim Barrier.
And now there's another issue that I want to bring up. It needs to be addressed, I think. I've already heard people saying things that this is God's judgment. God is judging America, with the coronavirus and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I get so tired of that. Every time there's an earthquake, it's God's judgment. When there's a hurricane, it's God's judgment. I want to give our listeners a real quick little word study, a little understanding of some theological terms. There are two words. One is sanction, and one is consequence. And there is a vast difference between sanctions and consequences. A sanction is a punishment that the law merits to keep teeth in the law. If you don't have a sanction to a law, then the law is meaningless. Consequences are the results that happen. They're not necessarily somebody causing that to happen. Here's an example. If you go out and get drunk and drive a car, you can get pulled over by a police officer, and you can lose your license, pay a fine, go to jail, or all of the above. That's a sanction. The consequence is you could damage property, you could kill yourself or someone else. That's a consequence. And I'm afraid that people don't understand the difference between consequences and sanctions. I don't see this virus as a sanction, as punishment. I see it's a consequence to some bad choices, and there've been a lot of them involved in it. Just as I see in many other things, I never thought that AIDS was punishment. I know a lot of people took that view. I watched a couple die. A heterosexual married couple both died of AIDS, and I did never believe that God was punishing them.
I'm with you, my friend. I stood by the bedside of a young college-age man with AIDS and just desperate for some help, for somebody to love him. Yeah. And he requested to see me because he knew I was a pastor. He had never met me before. I was called in by a mutual friend. He said, "Please tell me, Pastor, is God punishing me?" And I said, "No, God punished Jesus for you, and God punished Jesus for me. I'm not approving of your lifestyle, but what God wants you to do is ask him for forgiveness."
Yeah.
It was just a heart-wrenching conversation.
It is, and I've walked through that. And I want people to be very clear on these things, that God's heart is not, he's not looking for some reason to beat us. In fact, even when you talk about the atonement of Christ and the punishment, there's a great misunderstanding with many people that that was public justice, not retributive justice. God was not angry with Jesus, but the law had to be enforced, and that's public justice. And so there needs to be better understanding. Unfortunately, I think the church has moved away from a hunger for teaching, and back to what I said earlier, they want to be entertained, but to dig in and get understanding of what these words are and what these thoughts are and what the concepts and doctrines that the church is founded on, that takes work, and it's not always entertaining.
Right, and getting back to the thing about the nations and does God judge, like I said at the beginning of the show, God will judge nations, mm-hmm. but he sends prophets, and he tells them that it's happening. So often people will look at a situation like this, or not just this, when there's an earthquake, when dictatorships are going, is it God's judgment? Is this Is this a sign of the end times? And I have to say, look, I don't know. Now, I'm open to the fact that God could speak to a prophet and tell them, but they've got to be a real prophet. They've got to be tested. They can't throw in, and by the way, Jesus is coming in our generation, because Jesus said even he didn't know he was when he was coming. Like, so they can't. But yeah, it's possible, but I'm not going to jump in and do this. There were pastors that were saying that 9/11 was allowed by God to judge us. Look, I'm not saying that in the Bible we don't see God in his sovereignty allow those things for judgment reasons. I'm just saying that unless God has talked, we've got to shut up. And Christians are notorious for putting words in God's mouth that he never even said.
And you know what? And I put that under the heading of taking God's name in vain. When you attribute something to God that he doesn't want to, to be blamed for, you're taking his name in vain when you do that.
Oh, you're so right, Jim. That's what that commandment really meant. They weren't talking about cussing. Now, that doesn't mean God wants people to cuss. I'm not saying that.
Right.
But I'm just saying that's not what that particular command was talking about.
Yeah.
It was talking about saying something in the name of God that wasn't true, or taking an oath before God and not keeping it, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So to our audience again, be very clear that my position, and I think, Bob, you're in agreement with this, is that God is a God of mercy and compassion, and he grieves more than we do. When the innocent die, when the innocent suffer, that breaks the heart of God. Does he want people to get this virus and
of course
get
not.
Sick or even die? No, that's not something God
doesn't want anybody to get
in.
It.
Yeah, but we do have consequences from not only our actions but other people's actions, and that's another great point. You know, I know you deal with apologetics a lot, and someone will say, "Well, how about somebody who has suffered and they didn't do anything wrong?" Well, they're suffering consequences maybe from another person's bad decisions, and that happens a lot in the human system.
Or the bad decisions of our forefathers who told God, "We don't need you to run the planet." And so God said, okay, if you don't. And the way I like to always put it is Henry Ford invented the automobile, but we don't blame Henry Ford every time there's an automobile accident, because we know he invented the automobile for good.
And that's where we need to look at things. So I want to encourage people, and back to an earlier theme, find a way to have fellowship, even if you have to sit on the other side of the room. But connect with people. I'm not sure that the internet is sufficient for everyone's needs.
The internet may not even stand the strain. There's more people on the internet than ever before. I mean, so don't be too dependent on the internet and electricity. The only thing we can really depend on, who will always have, is God.
Yes, and you can pray. I encourage people, when you're having all of this solitude, even if you didn't want it, you know, start some new disciplines if they're not part of your life. Find a time of prayer and meditation. Get that Bible out and blow the dust off of it and read the Bible. Do things that used to be routine Christian disciplines, and you might find it your own personal revival and renewal in the midst of that.
Absolutely. And, God is the God who comforts.
I'm trying to find the positive in this and honor God.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Jim. I have to ask you, though, quickly.
Yeah.
If our church history got put in a book and it became a Third Testament, would there be chapters like the Epistle to First and Second Zoom? Would we see that in there?
It's possible.
All right. My friends, hang in there. God is with you. You can get closer to God through this time. And I'll be back with you next week. See you then.
Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.